Welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, your place for free, expert tennis instruction that can truly help you improve your game. Today's episode of the Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by SomersetSportsPerformance.com. Real quickly, before we get to today's topics, I just wanted to relay a quick note here. I'm really happy to be doing today's show, and the reason for that is the first episode of the podcast, episode number one, was first uploaded on April 7th of 2008. Today, as I'm recording this, it's April 6th, 2009, which means that it's our one-year anniversary here at the Essential Tennis Podcast. So for everybody who has been with me through all this time, and even if you haven't been here from the very beginning, I really appreciate everybody who's been downloading the podcast. And it's been a great learning tool for myself. The more I answer questions and the more people that I try my best to help, the better of an understanding I get of this game as well. So thank you everybody so much for being with me as I continue down this path. It's been a lot of fun for myself, and I look forward to hopefully many more successful years of doing the podcast. So moving onward, let's get to today's topics. We're going to be discussing two topics. The first one is going to be creating more depth on your ground strokes. And secondly, we're going to talk about overheads, just overheads in general. We're going to talk about technique, positioning, and reading your opponent's shots and kind of trying to see that overhead or that lob coming a little bit earlier. So sit back, relax, and get ready for some great tennis instruction.
And now it's time for Essential Tennis Q&A.
All right, our first question on today's episode of the Essential Tennis Podcast has to do with ground strokes, and we're going to be talking about controlling the depth of your ground strokes and specifically creating more depth. This question comes to us from Dave, and he goes by Tennis Geek on the forums at EssentialTennis.com. And Dave posted in the forums, and by the way, he's from Northwest New Jersey, and he's a 4.0 player. He posted and wrote, "I was playing a pusher recently, and I noticed that all of my ground strokes on both sides, his forehand and his backhand, were landing within about 2 feet of the service line, sometimes even shorter. While this player couldn't attack those shots, other people I play with can and often put me on the defense. Anyway, since I wasn't under much pressure against the pusher, once I noticed the short balls, I tried to hit deeper. I aimed deeper, then higher over the net, and the ball still came down at around the same spot on his side of the court. Since I'm a 4.0 player, I hit my ground strokes with a lot of topspin. Any advice you can give me would be great. Thanks, Ian." Dave. Well, sure, Dave. And I want to start off this topic by saying that I'm glad that you identified this, because it is a very important topic. This is a crucial thing, especially if you want to move up in level, which I assume you do, from a 4.0 level to 4.5 or even 5.0. You're going to have to start hitting these shots with more depth. Depth is so important in your singles game because it keeps your opponent pushed back away from you. It keeps them back away from your position where they are in a more defensive position themselves. And that's where we want to try to keep them as much as possible. Not only does it keep them in a more defensive position in general because they're farther away from you, it's more difficult for them to attack and for them to hit an aggressively hit shot to your side of the court, but it also opens up the court for yourself so that you can hit more angles and move them even more while they are pushed back in that deep defensive position. So it opens up a whole lot of options that you wouldn't have otherwise if your opponent is constantly moving forwards instead of backwards. We want them pushed away from us as opposed to having the opportunity to move forwards. And as you said, this player that you played didn't have the weapons to be able to make you pay for this. But if you go and play a player who is a level higher than you, you better believe that they're going to be taking these shots that you're hitting around the service line or so, and they will be making you pay for these shots. So it's extremely important that we do work on this. One point I want to make before I move on to actual ways that we can create more depth is that few people really realize how much space there is between the service line and the baseline. When you're standing on your own baseline and looking across the net at your opponent's side, it looks like kind of a small section of court back there. Dave used the service line as kind of a landmark, and I often use the service line, every day I use it, as a point of reference when trying to get my students to hit stronger, more pressuring shots off the ground with their ground strokes. There's 18 feet of space in between the service line and the baseline. That's a lot of room, especially when you consider that, for whatever reason, in a distorted point of view, oftentimes tennis players think that to really hit a good shot, you've got to practically aim for the line. You know, you've got to hit a shot that lands like 6 inches from the baseline. A lot of times I compliment students on hitting a really nice ground stroke, and they ask if their shot was in, and I tell them, yeah, it was in by a foot. And they seem to think, oh, well, that's not even that good. I've got a lot more space there. Well, that's not true. A foot is extremely close to the line. You should be giving yourself 3-4 feet of space minimum to give yourself margin for error. So when we take that into consideration, 18 feet of space between the service line and the baseline is a ton of space. And so, Dave, I want you to start utilizing that space more. So let's talk about this. In singles, because it's so important, we need to start working on your technique a little bit to get these shots deeper. And there's three ways that I'm going to outline. Three ways that we can hit the ball deeper from your ground strokes, either forehand or backhand side. Three main ways. I could come up with more kind of smaller technical things, but these are going to be the big ones. Way number one would be to hit the ball with less topspin. Topspin makes the ball curve downwards, and by hitting with less topspin, by hitting the ball flatter, we could make the ball go farther because that lack of spin would allow the ball to travel farther before coming down into the court again. Dave said that he hits with a lot of topspin. So if we hit the ball at a little bit flatter trajectory, a little bit more forwards, instead of swinging upwards so much, we can make the ball travel farther. However, I don't like this option. Topspin is good because it gives us margin for error over the top of the net. We can aim higher over the top of the net and still hit a consistent shot without it traveling too far. Now, hitting the ball too far is not your problem, Dave, but I just want people to understand that to be able to hit a lot of topspin, that's excellent. That's really something that people struggle with learning oftentimes. So because you have a lot of topspin, that's great. We don't want to mess with that. Main way number two that we could hit the ball deeper would be to hit the ball higher. And you mentioned that you had tried this. And there's a couple different ways we could try to do this. We could try opening the racket face a little bit more rather than hitting with your strains perpendicular to the court, or what might feel like perpendicular to the court, or maybe even close to you. We could try slightly opening the racket face and tilting the strains a little bit more upwards. And that would achieve, because you're hitting with a lot of topspin, you are swinging upwards. If our face was a little more open, that would give us some more height and therefore some more depth. That's kind of dangerous. I don't really like that so much either, but that's something you could experiment with to try to give yourself some more depth without changing much else technically. You mentioned that you tried aiming higher, but you just kind of hit the ball in exactly the same place. And that's because without really changing anything else, if you continue to hit with a lot of topspin and just accelerate and just swing up, all you'll do is just make more spin. And so without really changing the path of your racket much or the other fundamental technical things in your swing, by aiming higher and just swinging upwards, you're either going to get just basically the same resulting depth because you're just making more and more topspin, or the result is going to be a really high looping shot, and it's not really going to be very penetrating. It's not going to be very strong. It will probably be deeper, but it'll be more of a moon ball. And what we're going for here is a little bit stronger of a shot. We're trying to drive it a little bit deeper in the court. So for that reason, I don't really like option number two either. Unless you told me you were also hitting the net a lot, which you didn't tell me. So assuming that you're not making a lot of mistakes into the net, I don't really like the option of aiming much higher either. So that brings us down to way number three. And in case you hadn't guessed, I like option number three more. Here's the option I want you to work on. I want you to continue to hit with the same amount of topspin because, as I outlined a second ago, topspin is good. I want you to keep hitting with that topspin, but we need to learn to drive the ball stronger forwards. This is the option that we need to be able to start getting better at if you want to improve and really advance the level of your game. To do this, we're going to have to focus on rotating your core as a whole, which creates drive. I'm going to talk real quickly here about differences in what body parts are doing different jobs on your ground strokes. Your forearm and your shoulder predominantly are creating lift. We're lifting the ball. We're swinging upwards with our shoulder and with our forearm. We're swinging vertically. We're dropping the racket down below the height of the ball and swinging up. That upward path ultimately is what allows us to be able to hit topspin. So from the shoulder down, all the muscles from the shoulder on down to our hand, predominantly we're using those muscles to swing upwards. That's their job, is to create that lift and that topspin on the ball. Now, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, if you continue along that same path but swing faster, and you said before you're trying to aim higher, all we'll do is just make more spin because you're not using your body, your core anymore. And that's what we need to start using more of. So the topspin is great that you're creating. I don't want you to lose that. What we want now is more forward motion. And I keep using the term core. What does that mean? That means your hips, your chest, your torso, all the biggest parts of your body. Your core is what is going to create the drive that we need to hit the ball stronger forwards and create more depth in harmony with that spin that you're creating. We want that top spin. We want the curve in the ball, but we need to also add more drive. So I'd be willing to bet that you're probably not using your core very much, and therefore we're not creating very much drive. Now, the pros typically rotate their core at least 90 degrees. They will, in preparation for an oncoming ball on both a forehand and a backhand, let's say this first. On a forehand and on a two-handed backhand, they will their preparation is to rotate their body 90 degrees to the side. So they begin in a ready position with their shoulders parallel to the baseline. The first move they make when they see if it's a forehand or a backhand is to rotate their core to the right or to the left, whichever side the ball is coming on, 90 degrees, so that their core is then perpendicular to the baseline and turned towards the side that the ball is coming on. That's always a professional player's first move, is to rotate the core, and typically also to bring the racket upwards also, which we just talked about it in a show not too long ago. So from there, they will rotate back forwards again, that full 90 degrees, at least to parallel again with the baseline, so that they have made a 90-degree turn back, and then at least a 90-degree turn back forwards again. And it's that rotation of their entire body, of their core, that really creates the drive, the forward hit of the ball. That's what we need to get good at. Now, pros, a lot of times when attacking, when hitting a more aggressive shot, will very often rotate more than 90 degrees. In fact, it's not uncommon at all to see on a forehand a professional player rotate a full 180 degrees, a whole another 90 degrees past what is minimum. We need at least 90 degrees of turn. A lot of times you'll see them on a forehand make a full half circle rotation with their core. So if there was an arrow coming out through their chest pointing forwards, perpendicular to their chest, we would see that arrow trace a half circle with their body a lot of times when attacking. Not always, but when they have the time to set up and really take a big swing at the ball, you'll see them use a full 180-degree rotation with their core. So this is what you need to start working on, Dave. If you want to drive the ball stronger and hit it deeper, don't stop swinging upwards. I don't want you to flatten your swing out and lose that topspin, because we're going to need that topspin in order to stay consistent. But I would be willing to wager that you're probably not rotating your core very well, and that's what's causing the ball to fall short. Now, ideally, Dave, if you could go and get a video camera and post a video of yourself hitting ground strokes from the baseline, from behind you would probably be the best angle so that we could actually see the resulting shots, where the ball is going. Yeah, if you could do that and post it on the forums, I'd be happy to take a look at it and critique it for you. And the other professionals at Essential Tennis would be happy to take a look at that as well. But I bet that we just need to stay loose, stay relaxed from the shoulder down, and start turning your body more to create more drive and more a more powerful shot. So Dave, hopefully that answers your question. We went into a good amount of detail there. If you have any further questions with that, feel free to continue posting on the forums at EssentialTennis.com. And I look forward to hearing back from you on this and seeing what you think. Thanks, Dave, and good luck. All right, next up on the show, we're going to be talking about overheads. But first, I just want to tell you guys briefly about today's sponsor of the Essential Tennis Podcast. Today's sponsor is SomersetSportsPerformance.com. One thing that makes the internet so great is it's easy to find good information. And that's why you guys have come to Essential Tennis, is to find good tennis information. SomersetSportsPerformance.com does that same thing. They offer great expert information, except instead of tennis, it's for nutrition and getting in shape, physical training, also for sports medicine. So they run the whole gambit of sports medicine, training, nutrition. And what happens after you sign up, you answer a bunch of questions, you tell them your goals, where you are right now, and they set up for you a customized workout and nutrition program tailored just for you. And along the way, you have access to sports medicine doctors, certified physical trainers, and certified nutritionists. If you ever need any help or have any questions, they're always there to help you out. Along with this, you get specific exercise technique demonstrations. They have lots of video content, and they give you specific workout routines tailored just for the goals that you're trying to reach. And along with that, you also get nutrition plans, including recipes and grocery lists, so that you can stay on track with your eating as well. So it's a kind of an all-encompassing program that you can access directly from your computer. And so I thank them for their sponsorship of the Essential Tennis Podcast. And if you appreciate the podcast, go check them out and return the favor and go show them some patronage. So SomersetSportsPerformance.com. That's SomerSet, SportsPerformance.com. I thank them very much for their support. All right, now let's go ahead and get to our question about overheads. And this comes to us from Charles, who, of course, is a very regular contributor at EssentialTennis.com. He wrote to me and said, the reason so many players are afraid to play both up at the net, meaning in doubles, having both players up at the net, is the lob. They think they won't be able to run back quick enough to hit it, or they feel their overhead is poor. Yesterday, I was feeding a few lobs to a guy, and at first, he was hitting straight down since he was right up on top of the net, but hit it on his side of the net, which obviously doesn't work out too well. Then I told him that he shouldn't hit straight down, so he bent his wrist back so his racket face was pointing up, and that caused the ball to fly long. I figured the answer was to hit it more like a serve, i.e. swing upwards, but have the racket perpendicular to the court. It's good observation, Charles, and we'll get to that as we answer your question. He's got a second part to his question as well. Here it is. The overhead is tough for two reasons. You have to recognize when a lob is going to occur. With so-so doubles players, you can end up giving them balls that are nice and easy to hit a passing shot or a lob, as they aren't always lobbing because you pressured them tremendously and they had no choice. And you have to get in position to hit it, and then you have to hit it in. So the questions are, how should you prepare to react for a lob? When should you position yourself? I'm sorry, he says, where should you position yourself for the overhead once you recognize that it is a lob? And finally, how do you hit the overhead? Is it like a serve? What are the common mistakes in hitting an overhead? Perhaps it's too low and a volley would be better instead, etc. Good questions, Charles, and I agree with you that this is a big problem that average level players have, and this is one of the biggest hindrances that they have in playing a two-up position, which, in my opinion, is by far the best position in doubles. You want both players to be in an aggressive position and pressuring your opponents, and the best way to do that is to have both players up at the nets. If you don't have a good overhead, then yes, the lob can seems scary, but it shouldn't be that way. So I'm glad you're asking these questions, because we need to go over some of these topics so that some players out there who don't like being at the net with their partner can hopefully have some things to work on to improve their doubles game. So you asked three questions. How to anticipate the lob, where to position yourself, and the technique, the stroke. How do we actually swing at the lob? Now let's talk about all those individually. First of all, anticipation. I have three things here that you need to start doing to improve your anticipation of the lob, and that's really what it comes down to. Yes, if we can see it coming, then it's going to be a lot easier to handle, isn't it? A lot of times the problem occurs when you're completely taken by surprise by the lob, and so you're kind of sent scrambling and you're off balance and everything's all crazy. And yes, of course, then your overhead's not going to be very effective. So let's talk about anticipation. The first thing that you need to do to improve your anticipation of the lob is you need to start realizing more often and, you know, mentally making a note of when your opponent is in a difficult and defensive position. And I see this all the time with average level players, meaning around a 3.0 level or maybe a 3.5 level, where one player hits a good shot and puts their opponent off balance, and they're really just going to barely get to the ball. And the first player, the person who hit the good shot, just stands there and just watches them. Now, if you're on the baseline and this occurs, you should be moving forwards. I see all the time when a player hits a great shot, stands there and watches their opponent barely gets to the ball, barely gets a racket on it, and just dribbles over just a weak short shot, which is exactly what's going to happen most of the time at that level. If they do make it, which probably won't be too often, it's going to be a weak shot. You need to realize that. And oftentimes the player who is put in a tough position hits that weak shot, barely gets to the ball, barely hits it over, and then wins the point off that weak shot, because the person who hit the strong shot is sitting back there at the baseline just watching the action and kind of enjoying it because their opponent's on the run. That's not the right way to respond. And same thing with doubles. When you hit a good shot and you're at the net, you need to look for the lob, because that's the kind of the obvious response from your opponent. If they're being pushed, you know, way back or way to the side, or they're barely getting a ball that was hit short, chances are they're going to be thinking about hitting a lob, because that's what's going to buy them the most amount of time to get back into the point. And that's really their only hope, especially at a 3.0 or a 3.5 level. They're not going to hit an on-the-run passing shot, you know, for a winner. Maybe once a match, but that's not a shot you really have to be concerned about. So first of all, with anticipation, realize when your opponent is in a defensive position. Secondly, take note of your opponent's tendencies, meaning that just because they're not in a defensive position doesn't mean they're not going to lob. You're going to play some players who will lob when they have an easy shot and they're not in a defensive position. They're not on the run, and they're just going to lob because they like to lob, and maybe they're really good at it. And so you need to make a mental note of when that is the case also. Realistically, that doesn't happen nearly as often as many players like to lead you to believe. You're not going to play teams all the time that just sit back and hit all lobs. However, it's very possible you'll play somebody who likes to use a lob in order to try to hit over somebody who's come up to the net. Maybe they're particularly good at it. And so if you get lobbed over once, well, fine. If you get lobbed over twice, kind of in the same way and in the same situation, all right, I might even give you that one. But from here on out, you better be paying very close attention every time you get put in that same situation, because you need to start anticipating that the lob will come so that you're not taken by surprise again. Point number three on anticipating the lob better. The first two were when your opponent is in a defensive position, you need to pay attention to that. Point number two was when your opponent has a tendency of using the lob, you need to pay attention to that as well. Number three, watch your opponent's grip and racket face closely. And especially when they're in kind of a defensive position, they're on the run, and you're watching them get to that ball and barely get to it, watch what their racket is doing. If you see that they start switching to a continental grip, or if you see that they start to open their racket face, they are not going to drive the ball. They're going to be lobbing the ball. And so you have to watch and see technically what they're doing with their hand and with their racket as well. And If you start looking for that, you'll start picking up on physical cues that telegraph to you that they're getting ready to hit a lob. And so all those three things together, if you start paying closer attention to all three of those things, you will start reading the lob and anticipating it much better than before. And all of you playing doubles out there who are below a 4.0 level, I can just about guarantee that you can probably improve quite a bit in at least one of these three areas, if not all three. So make a mental note of this next time you go out and play doubles and you're at the net. Hopefully it's helpful to all of you guys who are out there playing doubles matches and singles matches too. This applies to singles also when you're up at the net. Now, position. Where should you be positioning yourself in order to hit an overhead? You need to position yourself wherever you have to in order to make contact with the ball with your racket and arm fully extended and with your body in a balanced position. We should be making contact with full extension with your shoulder, arm, and racket. You should be reaching all the way up as you make contact. And the second part of positioning is that we need to be in balance with our body, not leaning or falling one way or the other. We need to be in balance so that we can make a good, strong swing at the ball. If you're making contact really low, the ball is like shoulder height and you're not extending, you're too far back, you need to move forward so that we can hit the ball higher, at a higher contact point. If the ball is behind you, then clearly we need to move back. So those are the basics there on positioning. Now let's talk about the actual technique. Charles, you were right on track. This is just like a serve in a lot of respects. It's not exactly the same, clearly, because we're not controlling the toss or where the ball is. However, a lot of the technique of what we're doing with the racket is the same thing. Just like on a serve, we're making an upward swing at the ball. And you mentioned this. You should not be swinging downwards. Sometimes you're able to. If you're very close to the net, if the lob is barely making it over, it's very weak. Oftentimes, from that position, we can hit down at our opponent's side of the court. However, if it's a decent lob or a good lob and you're at the service line making contact or behind the service line making contact with your overhead, you're going to have to make an upward swing to get the ball over the net and hit it to your opponent's side of the court. Don't hit down from behind the service line. It's not going to make it over. So that's number one. It's an upward swing. Once in a while, it's downwards, but it's going to be dependent on your position relative to the net. You'll get a chance once in a while, but not terribly often. Next up, flat racket face. We don't want the racket tilted back and facing towards the sky. And Charles noted that his hitting partner had tried that. No, it's not going to work. That's going to result in either hitting a very weak shot to keep it in play, or if once you start trying to accelerate, the ball is going to go out because the racket face is tilted open. So the racket should be flat. We don't want it tilted downwards either because, again, we've got to hit the ball over the top of the net. So it should be flat, perpendicular to the court surface as we're making our upward swing at the ball. Lastly, just like a service motion, other classic serve components like the trophy pose, racket drop, and use of pronation to create more racket head speed, those are all parts of a good overhead as well. If you don't know what those things are, feel free to write me on the forums or at ian@essentialtennis.com and ask me, and I'd be happy to go over those. Those are all essential parts of hitting a good serve and hitting a good overhead as well. We need to make sure that all of those things happen and a good overhead stroke. So, Charles, hopefully that covers all your questions, and hopefully that answers them. And I know, Charles, you need to work on some of these things as well. I've hit with Charles a couple of different times. And to improve your doubles game, Charles, these kinds of things are going to be very important because we want to develop that confidence to get close to the net. And if you're listening to me now and you don't like getting close to the net because you're afraid of the lob, these are all things that most likely you're going to have to work on. All the things that I just outlined as far as anticipation and positioning and the actual swing itself. So, Charles, thanks for the great question, and I look forward to seeing you back on the forum. All right, that brings episode number 60 of the Essential Tennis Podcast to a close. Thank you very much for joining me today. I really do appreciate your support of the show by downloading the file. And if you appreciate the good tennis instruction that I'm giving here every week on the podcast, do me a favor and just tell people about the show. especially now that things are starting to warm up in a lot of the country and the outdoor season is starting to begin. Your doubles partner, tennis team members, or just a practice partner, just a hitting partner, somebody that you go out and play with casually, do me a favor and just tell them about the show. Tell them to go to iTunes or to my website and download it. I really want it to continue to grow, and you listeners are going to be the best way that is going to happen. So I would appreciate that if you would just tell somebody else about the show sometime during this week. All right, well, that does it for me today. Take care, everybody, and good luck with your tennis.